From Maine Public Radio and mainepublic.org, I'm Ari Snyder with the news on This Day in Maine, Monday, July 27th, 2026. President Trump's border czar Tom Homan told CNN's State of the Union the administration is reviewing the vetting of David Brillet, the ICE agent who shot and killed a man in Biddeford this month.
Well, look, you know, ICE has about 30,000 employees. They all go through vetting. This is a kind of a rare instance. But again, it's under review. There are several things under review, right? The training is under review.
In news reports since the shooting, friends and relatives have described Brillet as having exhibited violent behavior. Homan says if such reports prove true, it's information that should have been part of the vetting before Brillet was hired by ICE. Four conservation groups have permanently protected more than 78,000 acres around the McGalloway River watershed in the Rangeley Lakes region. It's a popular destination for fly fishing and birding. And Mark Berry with the Nature Conservancy in Maine says the parcel is also important for wildlife that need room to move in a warming climate.
Altogether, these 78,000 acres provide a really important connection to a total of 500,000 acres of contiguous conserved land.
The groups say most of the land around the McGalloway will continue to be managed sustainably for timber harvesting. Public access for hunting, fishing, snowmobiling, and other recreation will also continue, but more than 11,000 acres will be set aside as a wilderness preserve. A jury in Kennebec County Superior Court has awarded $17 million to a woman whose bladder was mistakenly removed at Northern Light Inland Hospital in Waterville, Patty White reports.
When Emily Mitchell went in for surgery in March of 2023, she was supposed to have an ovarian cyst removed. But when her condition deteriorated after the surgery, Mitchell was transferred to Eastern Maine Medical Center. That's where doctors discovered her bladder had mistakenly been removed. According to the law firm Berman & Simmons, which represented Mitchell in her malpractice case, she endured more than 8 months of surgeries, complications, and infections before having reconstructive surgery in Massachusetts. But she still needs self-catheterization multiple times a day to empty her bladder. Northern Light Health must pay $17 million in damages for past and future medical expenses and pain and suffering. Inland Hospital is permanently closed. The doctor who performed the botched surgery, Danielle Gagnon, no longer works for the health system. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Patty White.
The Trump administration has scrubbed federal websites of information about creating a safer environment for what's known as active transportation, including bicycles. It's also proposing to redirect funding for such projects to highways and bridges. Bicycle Coalition of Maine Executive Director Andrew Zaro says it's part of an emerging pattern.
I think what we are witnessing ultimately is a deeply concerning shift away from evidence-based transportation policy.
Zaro says so far no specific projects in Maine appear to be affected, but that could change if federal funding dries up. And he says it comes at a time when the coalition, the state, and some localities are experimenting with traffic calming measures aimed at reducing the number of pedestrian deaths. And Bangor International Airport closed its runway for about half an hour today due to an in-flight emergency shortly before noon. According to Swiss Air, a flight from Zurich to JFK diverted to Bangor after smoke was detected in the business class section of the plane. The airline says the local fire department inspected the plane and found no signs of fire or heat. Swiss Air says all 208 passengers and crew are safe, and its experts are investigating what may have caused the smoke. President Trump says he will impose a 50% tariff on some goods imported from Canada in retaliation for what he calls the country's unequal treatment of U.S. cars, dairy, and alcohol. Maine State Chamber of Commerce President Patrick Woodcock says he's hopeful the 30-day implementation schedule leaves room for a resolution, but that Canada's relationship with China and the U.S. war with Iran make any trade policy complicated.
Trying to see how they can have a working relationship that doesn't have collateral damage for a trading partnership that is so important to Maine is going to be critical.
Woodcock says the tariffs likely won't affect Maine's energy, seafood, and forest products imports. After a tumultuous month, Maine Democrats have a new nominee to take on Republican Senator Susan Collins in the fall. They're hoping that Troy Jackson can harness the populist energy of his predecessor, Graham Platner, who was forced to end his campaign under a cloud just after the primary. As Steve Missler reports, Jackson has long pushed for the rights of the working class, but his record will now face heightened scrutiny.
At a Labor Day rally in Portland last year, a crowd of 6,000 strong turned out to hear their new anti-establishment hero.
Because as goes Maine, as goes the nation. Thank you very much.
Grant Plattner then left the stage to make way for a logger from Allegash, who was running for governor, but also leveraging his everyman image.
And they don't want somebody with grease on their hands and shit on their shoes. Someone who talks funny, didn't go to the right school, and doesn't share their pedigree. To them, that is what we are, nobodies. But we know better. We know they aren't coming to save us. They never have, and they never will.
Jackson ultimately placed third in the Democratic primary for governor. Plattner vaulted to national prominence, emerging as the party nominee. And then, just a few weeks later, collapsed under the weight of scandal.
We believe that for the movement to continue, it can't be made.
Now, after winning a hastily arranged nominating convention, the party's hopes of unseating Republican Senator Susan Collins have fallen to Jackson. A lot is at stake, and the contest will be a test of whether he can channel the energy of a movement that Plattner built and had sustained until just a few weeks ago. So who is Troy Jackson? His journey from the North Woods into politics began nearly 30 years ago at a protest at the Canadian border.
For the second day in a row, a group of American loggers parked their pickup trucks in the middle of the road near a remote border crossing in northwestern Aroostook County. The loggers are upset with the way Canadian logging companies are doing business in Maine.
Jackson was among a group of unemployed loggers who used their pickup trucks to blockade the St. Palmfield border crossing with Canada. They were protesting what they said were labor law violations by companies that hired Canadian loggers to cut American wood in the vast timber lots near Jackson's hometown of Allegash. Then, just 31 years old, Jackson joined the protesters, arguing that the American woodcutters were losing job opportunities or working for less.
It's gone down from what it was 10 years ago. I mean, I don't make near what I used to 10 years ago.
An Associated Press photo taken in 1998 shows him glaring at the Maine State Police troopers as they tried to persuade the loggers to open the road.
Troy was very emotional, and rightfully so.
Dana Duran, who was working for the State Labor Department at the time, was dispatched to the scene. He says landowners in Maine, mostly paper companies, had a financial incentive to hire Canadian loggers.
There was a real demand from those landowners to have a lot of people on the ground to cut wood and to move wood. And so, you know, they looked heavily upon Canadians to do that work.
Jackson's sense of injustice simmered. The population in Allegash had plummeted to about 250 people. The local school closed. By then, he was a young father and often forced to leave his family during the week to take jobs that were hours away. In a speech during a run for Congress in 2014, Jackson recalled how his son would hold tightly to his hand on Sunday nights because he didn't want his father to leave.
As if all the strength that he had in that little hand could counter generations of corporate greed that was keeping other young children in the St. John Valley from their parents. It was during those long Sunday nights that would turn into early Monday mornings that I stopped accepting things for the way that they were and started thinking about the way that they should be.
Jackson first ran for the legislature in 2000 as a Republican and lost. 2 years later, he ran as an independent and won. 2 years after that, he became a Democrat. And his positions on social issues have also changed since then. Early on, he earned top ratings from anti-abortion groups. In 2009, he opposed a bill legalizing same-sex marriage. He's tacked sharply left on those issues as he's climbed the political ladder, but his focus on economic populism remained steady, especially when it came to protections for Maine loggers. In 2009, he led two reporters on a ride-along as he scanned radio traffic for French voices and led incursions into logging job sites to inspect for Canadian workers. He fired back at landowners who had branded him a rabble-rouser.
You're either lazy and a troublemaker or you don't want to work. That's what they do. They try and discredit you.
Jackson has long claimed the working class as peers and invited confrontations with what he says are their enemies, corporations, business owners, even governors. In 2013, Republican Governor Paul LePage made headlines for using a crude sexual remark about Jackson during a budget standoff. He also insulted Jackson's intelligence.
People like Troy Jackson, they ought to go back in the woods and cut trees and let somebody with a brain come down here and do some work.
It played right into Jackson's 2014 convention speech. He likened LePage to the landowners he'd been fighting for more than a decade.
I wear that incel as a badge of courage because it means that I'm standing up for men and women that have been forgotten for too long and left behind for too long.
His rousing speech did little for his congressional primary bid. He lost to centrist Emily Kane by 40 points. The loss stung, and he began to gravitate toward independent Senator Bernie Sanders of Vermont, endorsing him over Hillary Clinton and working for his campaign during the bitter 2016 presidential election.
But ladies and gentlemen, I never believed I'd have the chance to vote for someone who speaks directly to me, my family, and our feelings and our fears.
Jackson returned to the legislature that same year, setting his sights on leadership. He was chosen as Senate president 2 years later when Governor Janet Mills was elected to her first term. He clashed frequently with Mills and butted heads with others too. Dana Duran, director of the Professional Logging Contractors of the Northeast, says Jackson and his group were sometimes at odds as the logging industry became more mechanized. There were blowups at the State House, but Duran says the relationship is okay now.
He may have developed perspectives when we were in opposition that he wasn't okay with, but I think that's evolved over time and he's matured.
And now, as he enters the Senate race, the national press has begun probing Jackson's dust-ups with lobbyists and fellow lawmakers, including a shouting match with legislator Charlotte Warren in 2021 over a criminal justice bill. Warren, who endorsed Jackson at the convention, called it a family fight.
Troy and I are bare-knuckle brawlers. We believe in what we believe in, and we're going to fight for it.
Warren says the U.S. Senate needs more brawlers like Jackson. And Jackson says he's not worried that any of his past political disputes will hobble his campaign.
People elected me, and I feel like I have a job to deliver. And sometimes that maybe got more passionate than it needed to be.
And right now, intensity is what Democrats need from Jackson. He has fewer than 100 days to assemble a campaign to take on incumbent Senator Susan Collins, who is backed by a well-funded Republican machine. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Steve Missler.
In western Maine, along the New Hampshire border, several conservation groups have permanently protected 78,000 acres around the McGalloway River from development. Heavily forested with a cold water fishery, conservationists say this is an ecologically important landscape that still feels remote and wild. It's a popular fly fishing and birding destination, and as Susan Sharon reports, in a heavily populated region such as New England, the parcel will benefit wildlife by linking 500,000 acres that have already been conserved.
It's a sparkling early morning in June. In the dense woods, 15 miles from a main road, the birds are awake. And Seth LaLiberty and I have just settled into his canoe. LaLiberty doubles as a school principal and a registered Maine guide. He and his wife own an outdoor sporting goods store in nearby Rangeley. He's also a rabid paddling enthusiast.
We are on northern Siskahus Lake, north of Twin Brook, and we're going to paddle up into towards the Big McGalloway and Little McGalloway Rivers.
The narrow lake is 20 miles long, surrounded by rolling mountains covered with trees. It's still and quiet. The shoreline is almost entirely undeveloped, but there's plenty of wildlife to be seen and heard. We paddle past a pair of loons, watch a kingfisher in a streak of blue nosedive into the lake to retrieve a fish. Observe an eagle perched on a tall spruce, and move quietly into a cove to record a jangly chorus of green frogs.
This is an example of, you know, when you take people paddling that they love and appreciate just sitting and listening to frogs. You know, there's so much to hear and see, just that little thing.
Despite the picture-perfect scene, Maine's north woods are under pressure from forest fragmentation and development, from wealthy landowners looking to purchase their own slice of heaven and close it off for their personal enjoyment. And then there's the threat of climate change and what that means for plants and animals already confronting habitat loss.
This is one of the largest conservation opportunities in New England in recent years.
Mark Berry is with the Nature Conservancy in Maine. Along with the Forest Society of Maine, Rangeley Lakes Heritage Trust, and the Northeast Wilderness Trust, they helped raise $62 million to conserve the McGalloway watershed, not only to continue public access for fishing, paddling, hunting, and snowmobiling, but as a way for animals to move around. The Appalachian Mountains, including this section of them, are a priority for the Nature Conservancy, Barry says.
Ultimately, we hope we have a pathway for species to move through the New England landscape and into adjacent parts of Canada and extending south throughout the Appalachians.
Under the terms of the conservation deal, much of the land will continue to be sustainably managed for timber harvesting to support the region's wood products industry. But the Northeast Wilderness Trust has also acquired more than 11,000 acres for a wilderness preserve. Bob and Mary Burr of Mercer were inspired to donate money for the project.
You can have the recreation, you can have the wildlife, you can have some forestry, but you also can have some special areas that are untouched. So I can't think of a better result.
Bob made his living in the wood products industry. Mary is passionate about wildlife.
This allows the real native animals, you know, to be able to have their own space without being infringed upon by us mortals.
The Burrs also enjoy paddling and being in the outdoors, which is another reason they hope the McGalloway will be seen as a national model for conservation. And so does guide Seth LaLiberty.
Oh, look at the kingfishers chasing each other.
Back on Aziskahas Lake, as he demonstrates proper fly casting technique, he says he's grateful that the McGalloway watershed is now protected.
Projects like this ensure, you know, that we're going to have access to be able to enjoy this and for years to come.
For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Susan Sharon.
And that's today's Maine News. For more stories, visit mainepublic.org. Coming up on Maine Calling at 11 tomorrow morning, food safety. I'm Ari Snyder. Thanks for listening.